Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Jeff, how are you doing this morning?
I'm wonderful, Sal. Yourself?
I'm doing great.
Who you got for us today?
A returning guest, one of our fan favorites, Ryan Batt.
Awesome.
He's in the podcast room. But before we get talking to Ryan, we got to do the question of the day.
Here we go.
And this one, I don't know where we're going to go with this one, but here's the question of the day. What is a conspiracy theory, the most ridiculous conspiracy theory that you kind of just might sort of think there's something to it that you just kind of might believe in? Ryan?
Well, I thought about this for, like I said, a couple of days now since you sent me the question. I thank God you sent me these questions.
We send the guests the questions about 2 days in advance.
I think we need to
and then
on
me
the
and
spot.
Jeff forget. Yeah. And then we're like, look at him the day of.
Yeah, he gave me the question this morning.
Oh, yeah. I got you.
No, 30 minutes ago.
I sat there and thought about this, and I thought, was COVID real? Is COVID not real? You know, and then I told you what Amity told me, Earth's got to be flat. You know, I mean, like, maybe it is, maybe it is. I don't know. I've never been in outer space. And then, you know, so I got to thinking about it, and I try to keep it ag related here. And, you know, we just, before we got on this, we was talking about heat and stuff like that, but, you know, global warming, is that real? Like, cause I, you know, you see studies of it and all this stuff, but you know what, for the past 5 or 6 weeks, it's been really cold here in Southern Indiana. Yeah. And we've had more snow than we've had since I was a kid. So, I mean, I know that I was calving cows out and, you know, trying to keep warm, and the kids, you know, didn't go to school for basically a month.
Yeah. You didn't feel global warming.
Yeah. I'm thinking this global warming is a hoax. I just really am. So I'm going to go, mine is going to be global warming.
Yeah, you're right, though. There's just like one person will say one thing, another person will say something else, and you're like, I don't know what to believe.
And I know it goes into, you know, like, it's always one of those things, you know, they came off the farm show there, what, a week or so ago. And so like, everybody's like, you know, here comes the corn planters, you know, everybody's getting out, and just so happened, guess what? This week it got warm. So who knows?
Yeah. I mean, well, it's Indiana. So, you know, I tell everybody we have four seasons in Indiana. A lot of days you can experience all four of them in the same day.
That is true.
That's right. 30 degree swings. Just crazy.
Or 50.
Or more. Yeah. Well, Jeff, what's yours?
You know, I haven't had 2 days to think about it. Thank you, Sal. But, you know, mine would have to be the UFOs. And I'm not saying like
pro or con. You think there are, or
I don't know. It's one of those things that just kind of intrigues me, because I'm always like, no, that's not true. It's fake. You know, it's crazy. But then you hear, I listened to a podcast when this guy was talking about, you know, UFOs or just, they've got a new term. It's not UFOs now, and I can't remember what they call it.
Yeah, but I know what you're talking about.
I sat there in the back of my mind going, okay, well, wait a minute. This guy, they can make some pretty good arguments, and they start talking about back in ancient times and people saying, seeing lights and stuff. And it's like, well, you know, you go back a couple thousand years, I'm guessing there are lights in the sky. It had to be a star or something, but I don't know. I'm curious.
Yeah.
I'm still not believing it, but the guy did make a case that would make you think about it anyway.
Well, mine is, and this ought to blow up the comments section. We ought to get all kinds of stuff, but I'm satisfied we went to the moon, but I can see where people would be like, we never went back. Mm-hmm. And that was at that time. I mean, it was transistor theory. I mean, you know, and yeah, I can go see the old space capsules and those were mountain men. I mean, those were people that were just brave beyond their time. But to do all that with transistor theory and just binary coded decimal computers I think you made the comment about your phone one time had more processing power than what sent the thing to the moon. So I'm like, God, they never went back. And you know,
I'm firmly agree with that one too, because that's one of those things that, you know, you would think that we would have, you know, 100 times the technology now that we did back then.
And so we'd have like
it seems like you'd be able to go on a field trip.
It's like, where's my jetpack?
With today's technology, let's go to the moon next week.
Yeah, you would think.
In that time period, the Cold War was just right. It was just crazy times. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know. So, right. Well, you know what? We'll probably watch the news tonight, and they'll probably come out with all this stuff, because I think they're going to release a whole bunch of things. But hey, let's get back on topic. Well, that was our question of the day.
Yeah.
If you got a better conspiracy theory, put it in the comments. So we'll we'll see what we end up
with. There we go. Let's find another rabbit hole to go down.
Well, speaking of cold winters, let's get down that rabbit hole. It was bad. This has been a tough winter for Southern Indiana. We're not used to snow on the ground for 30 days or whatever it was. Our snow, for the listeners where we live, it'll snow and then it's gone in a day and a half. It gets to be up in 40 degrees and it's gone. But this one hung around. And so coming out of this winter, you were talking about calving and cow-calf operations. What's a livestock operator focused on now with pastures and things coming out of this type of winter?
Yeah, I mean, like I say, we hit in there, the early December there. We kind of got a little cold spell snap through there, like the first couple of weeks, always around the Beef Congress time when we go show cattle in Indianapolis, and then it kind of comes off. And, you know, Christmas is hit or miss. You know, I was teasing my kids, you know, asking one of them the other day, do you remember snow on Christmas? And they've seen snow on Christmas, but typically not really. Yeah. But, like I say, that we've seen probably more rain on Christmas than we've actually seen snow around here. But, like in a cow-calf operation, you know, when you get in them in winter months, you really don't think winter until you hit January. It seems like as soon as Christmas is over, we're in winter. This year it happened, man. It really did happen. You know, we come out, I can't remember the date it snowed, but you know, it looked that second week of January, we're supposed to go back to school. And I think it cut loose a big old snow then. And, you know, my luck, you know, I'm calving cows. I think I lost four calves in that deal. One of them was probably not the weather's fault, and one of them probably was the my fault, and another one was just the cow didn't have time to get it up before it froze, and just there's a lot of things that happen. But and then you look back at the same thing, and you know, at kinds and quality of cows, you know, I got cows that are Texas Longhorns, which are native to be obviously in Texas in warm weather and stuff like that. I had one of those that had a calf, and she had it overnight. I wasn't even out there. The next morning I'm out there, you know, getting ready to check everything, you know, getting the tractor plugged in. We're going to feed cows in the next 30 minutes. And there's a little baby calf bouncing along through there. And
here's
this Texas Longhorn out there that's got maybe a half inch of hair all over. You know, she's got her calf up, had it nursed. It's bouncing around and it's maybe 6 degrees outside. And so I'm sitting there thinking, you know, like how does this happen? Yeah. You know, like what is the theory behind this? And
look at those Angus cows going, see, that's how it's done.
That's exactly right. Yeah. 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 You weigh 900 pounds and you weigh 1500 pounds. We're going to have a talk at the end of the season. Yeah. But, and it's just one of those things of, I think it's, you know, what we went through, every cattle livestock person, if you had sheep, goats, whatever on that's listening on here, you can relate to this, because how much barn space do you have? How much wind block do you have? Oh, you know that goodness. You know how it is on the wind. You know, yesterday, I don't know what it was yesterday, 70 degrees maybe or something like that. But as soon as that sun went down, that wind kind of picked up and it was like, whoa, we better get some coats on.
Get another layer.
You know, I think coming in here this morning, we was like 38, 40 degrees or something. But, you know, that plays a big effect. We just talked about on the, you know, conspiracy, you know, it could be a 30 degree swing in 12 hours. And so that's another thing to look into it. But I think we, you know, when looking into winter months here, you know, do we have ample bedding down or maybe some straw we can get from a neighbor, or maybe we got some put back, you know, to lay on top of that snow and, or ice in some of our cases we had this year. Calving those cows out, I mean, just watching them as close as you can. I know we've talked on here about the prices and stuff, and we'll probably get into that a little bit more and carry through it out. But, you know, like a baby calf's worth $1,000. So, you know, when I walk out there one morning and I see a cow lay there with a calf beside her and it's not moving, you know, I started my day off $1,000 less than what I was going to have in September. So, you know, that's something that you got to take into consideration, and just the initial cost of stuff that, you know, getting a little extra protein out there, maybe going to, you know, your feed store, Tractor Supply, whatever, and getting a bag of feed to give them a little bit more oomph, you know, to get through the day. You know, a couple pound of feed does a lot for an old cow out there that's fighting the wind and the snow. And, you know, there's lots of mornings we go out there and those cows have snow cover on their back or something, or maybe ice hanging off of them or something. You know, those cows, there's a lot of cases we can't do anything about that, but you know, we don't have the barns or the facilities to do it, but we got to keep them as comfortable as we can. And that's where, you know, unrolling some hay out for them to lay on or something like that, because that snow stuck. I mean, that first snow we had, I don't know how many days
it was cold.
It seemed like a year that the snow was there. And I talked to one of my good friends in New York, he works with me, and he does a lot of the beef on dairy that we've talked about before. And, you know, he's talking about, yeah, we just got 12 inches last night. Oh yeah, the neighbor got 3 feet, you know, 20 miles north. And like, I'm like, how do you guys survive up there? You know, like, and he's like, oh yeah, we'll get 300 or 400 inches. And I'm like, what are you even talking about? You know? And like, I get fascinated talking to this guy because I can relate to him in some sort, but he's like, yeah, we got to go move our piles, you know, whenever it starts thawing out so we can get ready for the next one. And I'm like, you know, I feel like I don't get everything done in one day that I have to do here. And you know, especially like on my dad, my neighbors, you know, that feeding multiple groups of cows and stuff like that, you know, like, what in the world? Like we're busy all the time because it's, you know, we're on daylight savings time or Eastern time, whatever it is. And we're recording fast time or something, whatever time we're in zone, you know, but like I say, it gets daylight at 7:30 ish, maybe, you know, and you know, it's getting better now, but you know, it was getting daylight at 7:30 ish. So you kind of get a view of stuff, what's going to happen. You leave to go to work and you come back home. Well, you know, like I got friends down in Kentucky or like Southern Indiana, that kind of where Du Bois, where you live at. And it's like at 4:30, it's dark.
Yeah.
And it's like, where did the day go? Like we was busy all day and you know, like, I didn't get all my stuff done. And you know, I didn't get that set of cows over there checked. And you know,
you check them in the dark in the morning, right? You check them in the dark. Evening. So you're doing your chores. It's always dark and stuff.
Right. And I told a guy the other day, I said, sometimes in the winter, I feel like I never see the sunlight. And it wasn't a depressing thing. It was just like, no, I'm being serious. Like, I don't think I ever really see the sunlight, 'cause I'm always doing something. I never say, it's a nice day out, you know, like, and so it's just one of those things that, keeping those animals comfortable
and keeping the waters unfrozen.
Right. Yeah. That water, you know, God loves the guy that invented a frost-free water fountain, but you know, some of them just didn't invent them quite as good as others. You know, I mean, there's give and takes to all that. And I'm sure it's how you put them in and don't put them in. And everybody's got their own logic, but, and then their favorite brand, I mean, you know, all that stuff. But you know, here's an example. I tell you what I did. It's pretty embarrassing, but I needed to thaw out one of my water fountains. So the theory was I was going to get some sawdust and lay around there, some straw or something, kind of get a little fire going.
Oh no.
Started up there, you know, just to kind of get some, 'cause the wind was kind of moving towards that water. I thought, you know what, we'll try to do that. See if this works. 'Cause I've seen it, you know, watch TikTok, man. I've seen this happen. This got to be real, right? You know, in about 3 minutes, the water fountain, plastic water fountain's on fire.
Oh,
you know,
God. Yeah.
No. The water fountain's on fire. You know, it's, of course, when you get plastic started, it ain't like you can just throw a little snow on there and it goes away, you know, so it's
pretty persistent.
So then I'm like, oh, well, where's the automatic fire extinguisher? I always keep a little can in my truck because you never know what's going to happen, or car fire or something like that. So I always keep I'm digging around, finding there. By that time, we got black smoke in the air, you know, finally get it out, you know, and the cows all run over there like there's going to be fresh water or something, you know, and then I, you know, and that's,
they were laughing at you.
Yeah. So like there's one side of one of my fountains, and I'm not going to tell you which one. So if you drive by, you'll have to look, and it'll be kind of like an Easter egg hunt. But like one side of one of my fountains, it's pretty black. So be looking for a new project to go in there. But, you know, it's one of those things, like you're trying to do different things to keep your water thawed out. And, you know, like that is a big thing because at one point, I got to where I think I was telling my mom and dad, I was like, they asked me what I was doing. I said, why you got that tank in the back of your truck? I said, listen, I have fell down this little hill slope going down to that pond. I've got my tractor stuck in this pond trying to break the ice. I've chainsawed it. I've axed it. I've everything. I was at 8.5 inches deep of ice on the pond where they got to drink out of whenever the waters are froze or whatever. And I said, it's just easier for me to drive to town and put $5 in that machine and fill this tank up and drive back to the farm and just let it, you know, let it go in my other tanks that I have sitting there and they can drink out of it.
Yeah.
I said, it saves me so much time. I said, and my legs, I tell you, I said, I'm beat up, I'm battered. I said, you know, and just, you know, who really is supposed to be on ice with a chainsaw and an axe in the first place? So, like, you know, like,
you know, the guys in the Dakotas right now, they're going to be making fun of you.
So, you know what? I don't care. I went to town, hooked my, you know, put the tank in there. We hauled water 3 or 4 times a day. I spent my, you know, $15 to the Washington County water treatment plant. So I'm happy with it, you know, but it is one of those things that, when you have multiple animals in a field or something like that, you know, it's not like you can just stretch a garden hose out from the house and just start watering them, because whenever they are out of water for, you know, even 5 or 6 hours, you know, when one drinks, they all want to drink.
Yeah.
And then you create a mess as well and cause injury on frozen ground or something like that. But, you know, the problem that we had this year with our frozen ground and snow is we had a lot of rain right before that happened.
Yeah.
And so, you know, right now there's a lot of mud that's coming up. And even whenever we had all the snow, you'd break through the layer of ice. You'd be, like 12, 15 inches of snow and ice there at our place. Yeah. And once you got down to getting that cleaned off, the next day the sun would shine. That would be clean. You could drive on, but then you would sink because you was in the mud. And so it's just, you know, and you got to think, we have luxury. We have a tractor. We have cab or no cab. We have warm clothes. That the livestock have whatever they've got. You know, talked about the one cow that had just a little bit of hair. We talk about our big Angus cows that's got, you know, they grow hair to, you know, to be in the winter. And it's just one of those things that animal husbandry we can do for those cattle to keep them warm, keep them fit, you know, especially if we're starting to calve or maybe like we fall calve. So we got babies on the ground. We need shelters for those guys. And, you know, it's kind of how much money can you put into it and still make money? You know, that gives it a big effect.
I'd much rather have frozen ground than mud.
That is for sure. That is for sure. Yeah. Especially with babies.
Yeah.
What would you mentioned like windbreaks and stuff. I mean, those open face barns, but I mean, those, unless you build it heavy, they're just going to rub them right down.
So, some of the neat things that I've seen that they came out here with here in the past or not in the past, but just recently was the continuous fence panels. They came out with they used an oil well pipe and making a continuous fence panel. That's what 20 to 30 foot long. And it's basically a freestanding panel, and it's going to have some weight. It's made out of a 3-4 inch pipe and then it's got some like rods in the middle or something to make a fence. So that, and it's portable. So you take your pallet forks on a tractor, pick it up, move it around. So I've seen a lot of guys that have started using those as wind blocks. And, what they do is they take a tarp or a sun, even a sunshade, and you wouldn't think a sunshade would block wind, but it does. And, you know, like I say, something that's maybe tore up or something. Yeah. They're probably going to chew on it or something like that. But I'll tell you one thing, they'll get behind it and stand. And, you know, like those panels, I've seen them advertised from anywhere from $200 to $400. And so, you know, if they're 30 foot long, well, I mean, most barns are 40 to 60 to 80 foot long. So, I mean, if you had 2 or 3 of those things set out there, and I think they're 5.5 feet tall or something like that. So, you know, those make excellent wind blocks if you can get those. You know, obviously in the West, they use a lot of big square bales, but they don't have the moisture and the rain. So, you know, that's a favor for them that they get to use those as wind blocks and stuff. But, and then obviously if you got some good timber ground where I don't have very many trees at my house where I feed my cows at. But if you can get those cows back into a wood somewhere, maybe start feeding them back in there, maybe an open spot, maybe that's a summer project you can do. Maybe clear a little bit of an area out to where, you know, there's
where they're going.
Yeah.
I mean, they naturally want to go to those places.
Right. Just a little shade, you know, or something just where they have it in the summertime, but in the wintertime, hey, that might be another temporary feeding area that I'm going to use for, you know, when it does get that cold. So, cause you do have the trees blocking the wind and stuff like that, because it's hard to plant trees in cow fields and that's just kind of not a thing that we typically do. So
there's something about those cows. You can have sheds and windbreaks and we were bedding cows down, got the sheds all bedded, and there they are. They're just laying out there in the pasture. It's like, you know, I gave you a warm, dry place to lay. Right. And they were comfortable. They're just
right out the weather.
Laying out in the open.
And that's the way, you know, a lot of people think that they need to be inside. You know, a cow's made to be outside. I know, even our calves that we have for our show calves and stuff like that, or, you know, even down to our, you know, 300 pound calves that we have, they prefer to be outside most of the time. I mean, you can have sawdust or sugar or anything bedded down in there, and they'll go in there when they need to go in there. But most of the time they do stay outside and they are resistant to a lot of stuff, but it's just the harshness that we've had in the Southern Indiana region in the past 5-6 weeks it has been a struggle.
So talking about the weather and stuff, do you see changes in the markets, in the cattle markets that can follow a weather trend?
So used to, we'd see a little bit more change than we do now. But right now it's kind of a positive thing with the weather trend, because we're shortage on numbers right now in the U.S. There's not as many cattle out there as there typically is. The on-feed report come out, you know, we're shorter numbers, but we're heavier on pounds. So, you know, like that, we're making up a little progress on the end of the run, but on the actual start here, and we get into that on, I think, the next question here. But, you know, like I think the market has followed the weather pattern to a point of we haven't been able to get enough livestock to the market.
Okay.
So the demand is what's carrying the prices right now, I think, a little bit more. You know, like we still got to have hamburger. We, you know, we did come off of Christmas there where we, you know, we talked in the earlier podcast about, you know, in November, it's hard to eat beef when you got, you know, you're supposed to eat turkey, I guess. So, yeah. You know, but right now we're gearing up for Memorial Day. I mean, that's the biggest thing, you know, the ballparks. Yep. Soon as you know, Indy and Cincinnati and Louisville and all of them start getting advertisements around here for the you know, the spring baseball season and all that stuff. You know, everybody's thinking, you know, we need ballpark hot dogs and we need to grill out and we can get the pool ready. We got, you know, that's whenever we hit our biggest part right there, you know, as far as livestock. So right now I think they're putting stuff in and I think they're getting stuff ready. They do have storage right now of meats, but I think the drive of the actual numbers of animals out there will actually push the market.
But, you know, we've seen these cow numbers down for several years now, right. And everybody kept saying, well, you know, it goes through cycles. We thought, what, 4 years for cows? It should be. But they keep saying now that those numbers are not coming up as fast as what they anticipated.
So to dive into that right there, I mean, that's one important thing of today's broadcast is, you know, I mean, we're not seeing the heifers being kept. I mean, even on a local level right here, there's no one's keeping the heifers.
They're just worth too much.
They're worth too many dollars. And as a farmer, even myself, you know, I'm sitting here thinking today, like, you know, like I, on my way here this morning, I'm thinking, what do I need to market? I need to have a better marketing plan than I had 4 years ago. 4 years ago, I sold the cow that, you know, lost her calf. And I was like, well, she just didn't do good last year. So I'm going to sell her. You know, last year I was to the point to where, you know, a cow lost her calf, but I'm just going to go ahead and keep her because they're worth so much. And I don't know if I can replace her. Now I'm to the point of I got the kids show heifers and I'm not keeping nothing else because they're worth so much that I still have to survive because, you know, sure. The livestock industry is just a little bit lagging behind of what happened, you know, 5 or 6 years ago when inflation went up because, you know, we've seen the price of equipment go up. We see the price of fertilizer go up, you know, and that all plays an effect in all this stuff. So cattle, obviously, you know, we're talking about cattle in this episode, but cattle has to go up because we got to be able to pay for the round bell string and we got to be able to pay for the tractor tire that we talked about. And there's just a lot of stuff that goes into effect on it. But the farmer is typically not keeping the heifers. You know, they didn't keep them last fall and they ain't kept them yet. And that's scary because we're not getting no new mama cows in the production. And you know, it takes, you know, so if we're keeping a cow now, she's going to be a year next year at this time. And we're thinking about breeding her next fall, 2026 fall. She's going to have a calf in 27. And we're going to sell that calf at the end of 27. So we're, you know, we're not, if we're keeping a heifer calf today, we're not cashing in on her till the end of 27
or 28.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you can clip a $2,000 coupon today or wait 3 years to get your check.
And that's the catch. Like, I mean, I guess, you know, we got some good friends that live by me and Sal. They're great farmers and stuff like that. And it's interesting. I'm going to call those guys and see kind of what they're going to do. Cause like, you know, that's on a lot more of a local level. And I probably should have did it before this podcast, but like, you know, they've got their own genetics. They keep back probably all their heifers and stuff like that. And, you know, it's what are you guys thinking? What's your thought right here on a local level? Because, you know, like, as I told you, my thought is I'm going to sell because I'm going to sell that calf for $1,800 to $2,000. What's my next step? So then I put the stockyard effect in here. I can buy a bred cow at the sale barn right now for, let's just say if I know she's confirmed bred and she's, you know, 4 to 6 years old, she's probably going to cost me $3,000 to $3,500.
Yeah.
Now a cow calf pair is probably going to cost me similar to that. So I'm going to say up to 4,000, but here's the fine line of it. That all seems real high. I mean, it seems high if I told you, your cow calf pair is going to cost you $4,000 or, whatever. That seems really high. And that's a lot for a guy to calculate, because we've been calculating cow calf pairs for 1500 to 2500 for years.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. We haven't been getting $1,800 for our heifer calves either, or $1,900 for our steer calves. Or so if you break that down, if you sell that calf in the fall and you're getting $1,800, $1,900, you're selling the cow right now and she's bringing $1.50 a pound and weighing 1,600 pounds, you're over $4,000 right now. So if you did the math, you're ahead of what you really was 2 years ago. But it's just the mindset of this is expensive. This Absolutely. Is $4,000. So I can only buy 2.5 cows for $10,000. I mean, how many people just have thousands of dollars laying around to buy cows?
Let alone a semi load.
Exactly. And I mean, like we're going to, I plan to buy, a couple of semi loads of calves this week to send out west. And, a semi load of calves may cost me $120,000-$130,000. So,
that's hard to believe.
It is. It's just, what's really funny is the first time you had me on here, we talk about this every time about the freezer beef,
Yeah.
And, from where they came from, I think I was like, Sal, I really got $1.50 on that. A cow brings more than $1.50 now, so it's just the mindset of, we've been doing this 3 years or whatever. And in that short amount of time, this cattle industry, the livestock industry, the farming industry has changed so much in 3 to 5 years that if you've been in it so long, how can you wrap your mind around it? Have you had time to wrap your mind around it? Do you understand the facts of this probably isn't going nowhere for a while? If you asked me, you said, hey, where you think this is going? I'm going to say, this thing's staying. This isn't going anywhere, because I just told you it took 3 years to get them heifer calves in production. So why would it go anywhere?
Yeah.
And we're going to keep eating meat no matter what. So McDonald's ain't going to take their Big Mac off the menu.
That's right.
So we're going to keep eating meat. We're going to keep getting better. And I encourage the people right now. I mean, if you're out there and you're considering improving your herd, right now is the time to do it. Because I've never really looked at EPDs and performance and stuff like that. We deal in the old show cows or we deal in the fun little exotic stuff I talk about. By the way, Sal, I did send you the picture of my $84 cow that had a calf.
Yes. Yep.
I didn't have your number, so I didn't say.
Yeah.
It was funny.
I got that. I started laughing.
Right,
I
was after like, that episode, like 2 days, 3 days later, I was like, hey, Sal, check this out, But yeah, and then the next day the other one had a calf. But
you're making as much money on her as you do your show heifer.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So, but it is a time right now where you can improve your genetics. You can look at the EPD. A lot of people, let's just say a lot of people in Southern Indiana, we sell feeder calves, we sell pounds. We don't sell performance heifers.
Right.
We're not selling breeding stock. We're selling pounds. If you're a feeder calf buyer, if you're a feeder calf grower, stocker, whatever, you want to buy that calf or you want to raise that calf, that's going to make you the most money. How many pounds can you put on that calf between now and then? Because the pounds is where the money's at. So, yeah, it may cost you a little bit more money, but if you're buying a $5,000 or $10,000 bull, keep buying it. Don't back off of it. Don't back off the cows. If you always say, hey, every year I want to try to buy 5 cows to replace or increase my herd, keep doing it. If you can afford to write that check, then do it, because you will gain money.
Yeah. So the initial cash outlay is a lot larger now, but the payoff's there.
And I think that's the thing to remember. It's just the cash outlay is more, the return is more.
Return is more. That's right. And that's where, with our company and stuff, we're looking at new ways to, and I'm sure you guys are the same way. How can we build an existing product with the age of our farmers increasing or becoming extinct?
You got your typical cattle buyers that show up every week. Have you seen any change? Are they looking for lighter weight calves? to, or are they still wanting, are they still buying like they always did?
So in our area right here that we're at, and I would speak this for probably any area that's going to listen to this, the buyers have not changed, but they're being more selective that they want those cattle that are weaned and vaccinated.
Okay.
But here's the problem with that. Until we have enough numbers come back into the system, yeah, when that semi leaves, we got to have it full. And that's where we get in a little bit of problem. So as a stockyard operator, manager, it doesn't play that much effect in it. As you having a full semi load of cattle of your own, it's a big asset to you. Because if you can wean and background your cattle, give them the shots and all that stuff we've talked about before, you will gain profit on those calves. So, you know, like I say, it's I wouldn't say that they're being more selective in a stockyard setting, but in an actual, like, coming to your farm, buying your calves, or knowing where to get those, like we just talked about, the genetics. Yeah. You know, because the guys in the West, they want something that's going to finish from 1,300 to 1,600 pounds. You know, they don't want the little fun the cow that we just talked about that had a calf, you know, because that one there's not gonna that one's not gonna be big and as pretty as the others.
She'll fit in the box and still have
room. Yeah. The little what we call freezer beef. Yeah. But like you know, they want the bigger animal, the bigger carcasses now, and you're getting, you know, if you think about this, think about you're taking a 1,600 pound steer to the locker, you know, the locker plant now, and it's costing you $2.15 to $2.20. I mean, you can't mess around a whole lot there. I mean, you know, it's kind of like, you know, we used to throw this away. Oh, I don't want this. I don't want that. Well, maybe you better think about what can you do with that? Cause you know, sure. You know, like, you know, we're probably going to say, okay, well the box of hamburger helper says we need 2 pounds. So we're going to cook 2 pounds. We're not going to cook 3, and then we might make burgers next day and we forget and then we throw it away. I mean, you're going to be more apt to be inclined on, you know, hey, I gotta make sure I'm spending my money right, because you know, the livestock industry ain't the only thing that's, you know, hell, the clothes we have on, the equipment we're using here to do this thing, everything's costing more money than what it cost 10 years ago. We know that.
Sure.
Gas is costing more money and everything. So like I said, the input that goes into raising these things is costing us more money, but it's just ways of figuring out, like, they, you know, using byproducts as, you know, like the distillers' grains and stuff like that, whenever they're, you know, backgrounding those calves and grower rations and stuff, just helping out to cut the cost down. Not to say that corn's astronomically high, but just sure. to cut the cost yeah. down of some of this stuff and just kind of get and find new ways of doing business, you know, like creating business for, you know, different entities. You know, the feed stores are kind of a fly by night thing, you know, like there used to be a feed store in every town. Now there's one every 6 towns or maybe 10 towns, you know, and it's one of those things that you may have to even order it, you know, the 2 weeks before you get there to make sure it's there when you want to get it. So, yeah. You know, just a guy raising 20 head of cows and then has 20 calves, you know, he's kind of at a little bit of a disadvantage versus a guy that maybe has, you know, 75 to 100 cows and has a full semi load of calves whenever they get done. So it's all about time management and just kind of like where do you put your priorities at? And, you know, like, I guess on what I got into earlier was, you know, I got my priorities on some show calves and, you know, some fun little stuff.
The moneymakers.
Yeah. The stuff that, yeah, exactly. And then, you know, like, you know, I maybe need to sit down now and say, hey, maybe I'll just sell some of this stuff that I've had fun with for 10 years and really look at, like, how can I make some money? Sure. We had a fella, not to mention any names, but passed away there a couple weeks ago, and owns thousands of acres of ground, and his cattle's probably just so-so. And I did tell the guy, I said, come in there, and he wanted to know some numbers stuff. I said, you'd be better off to sell those 100 cows you got, buy 25 cows, and those 25 cows will make as much money as your 100 cows did.
Yeah.
But he didn't understand that. He's like, well, how can that happen? Like, well, you're getting bigger, better, fancier, stouter cows, going to put more pounds on your more pounds on your scale ticket when we weigh them, and then you're going to make more money, and you're going to have a better reputation, better rap, all this other stuff. And he's like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
I've always been amazed that, you know, you look at reports and stuff. And it's like, okay, well, 300, 350 pound calves. And I'm like, if my cows don't wave some wean off 500 plus, I'm going to get rid of them.
Right. Right.
And I've never understood that.
But. Well, I'll tell you, it's the stockyard business is, I've seen it all. And I tell my employers, my employers all the time, like, I don't do the stockyard thing for the money. I do it for the fun that I have. Like, it is the funnest job in the world because you just see so much stuff. And like you said, you know, like I'm sitting here telling you guys for the past 10 minutes about how you can improve your genetics and do this. And, you know, like we got to do this. And you're right. I don't know how many calves a week that we sell that weigh 300 to 500 pounds that are probably a year old, you know, like I get it. But at the same time, I've questioned some of these farmers, like, why don't you go get a couple bags of feed, or why don't you wean that calf, or, you know, what? Well, that's just the way we've always did it.
Most expensive words, you know,
yeah,
that you can have out there. We've always done it that way.
Yeah. And that's just the way that they know. They don't know no different. They don't really, it's not the fact that they're bad people or that they're trying to do something that's, you know, against something that, you know, new technology has came out with. It's just, you know,
change is hard.
Yeah, for sure. Cause they'll say, oh, well, we don't have a place to wean them. Oh, we don't have a place to vaccinate them. Oh, we don't have a way to do this. We don't have a way to do that. You know, coming into springtime, this is something that's good on this podcast here. We're coming into springtime, so everybody's going to want a bull. We're going to trade our bull out, or we're going to need a bull. And for years, I did this 24 years. I love every minute of it. For years, people come in and they'll be like, we need $1,000, $1,200 bull. I mean, what am I going to do? Give them a baby calf? You know, like
it doesn't exist.
That is so far behind times. That's not even 10 years ago. And so like, but that's what they want. And if it gets close to two, there ain't no way we can't. Now grandpa always went to town and he bought a bull and that's what it costs. And I'm like,
yeah, those
you sold your feeder calves for $1,500. You just sold your last year's bull that you had for 10 years that you haven't improved your genetics on. You just sold him for $3,500. Why didn't we just take the $3,500 and go buy a bull? And they're like, no, we'll just have to have that calf and we'll raise it up. So now you're throwing yourself out of 2 years.
Oh my God.
2 years out of selling calves because you're too stubborn to buy a bull that costs market price or more.
Or you got a 900 pound bull.
You're only
out there trying to breed cows.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Or they'll be like, well, we'll just keep one of our other bulls. Well, that didn't do you no good. That's how you get those 300 pound calves that come to the sale barn. You know, you would think in general, like this coming week, the first week of the month is our weaned preconditioned sale. And, we'll have, I think last in February there, we had 700 some head come through there on that sale. This sale will probably have near that, I would guess. Maybe we could have more, but, you know, that's something that we do to try to highlight the farmers that have taken care of their stuff, you know, did the little extra stuff to them and, you know, made the bulls steers and, you know, made sure that they gave them a little grain and they wormed them and back, you know, took a little care, a little TLC to them, you know, and did some of the right things. Now we'll still get farmers that'll bring us, you know, 300 pound calves that are a year old, which I just don't really see how it's even possible. I really don't, but it happens.
Well, you kind of crack the door open. You talk about how you do this job just because of the fun.
Yeah.
What's, you got any real funny stories that have happened of late that you could,
man, you know, I don't know of any that's really just happened, but just because we've had all this snow and like we had to cancel. We canceled one the first week.
He just told you about sliding down the pond bank.
Yeah. That's, oh my God.
There's no video. So it didn't happen.
You know, it's funny, since the last episode we did, I thought, golly, we got to get you guys into the sale barn. We got it. I told Sal, I was like, we're going to get you guys to come and we're going to bring the sound guy here. We're going to get you guys in the sale barn. We're going
to
set it up in the ring, right in the sale ring. And we're going to have this thing.
I'm in.
Yeah. But anyways, you know, like I tell you, like there's just stuff that happens all the time. There's, there's just random stuff that happens, stuff that you don't expect. And it's, you know, like the other day we had a guy come in and he comes in the office and he's just panicked. Well, I got to get these cows. There's a line. I get these cows unloaded. I was like, what's wrong? And he's like, oh, there's some down. I was like, oh yeah, just pull over here by this here. We get these things down. I mean, there was, I think maybe like 6 head on there or something. He had plenty of room. There was a cow just laying down.
Just laying down.
Yeah. And he's like, just in panic that he's got to get this cow off of there. We unload them off to the side, you know, get them off there. And I'm, you know, making sure everything. She gets up, walks off trailer. He's like, I got to get going. I'm late for. What do you mean you're late for something? You cut in front of 10 people here.
Oh, my gosh.
He played the cards that day. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, but, geez. You know, it's always just something. And you don't ever get mad at people. You just laugh and go on and just chalk it up as it's funny, you know.
She's probably a little show cow.
Yeah. And it's just one of the things that, you know, he needed to get going. He didn't want to wait in that line. And so he knew if he come in there and just kind of razz me up a little bit, I'd get it, you know, hey boys, we gotta get this thing unloaded. Let's go. And
well, everybody knows how it's done now.
Yeah. Make a phone call and say it's down, and I'll be out there to make sure you get unloaded really fast off to the side. So
if we do a podcast live from the stockyards, can Sal buy something while we're on the air?
Yeah. I have to check the seat cushions and get some money because I don't have that much on me.
You came to a couple sales.
Yeah,
I did. I remember when Kate was little and your dad came. Yep. And you wanted me to buy you some calves that day and you came early and we hadn't even maybe got halfway through the sale and we ended up buying some and so you had when you first bought your trailer.
That was. Yeah. Had a brand new cattle trailer.
Yeah. Sal had his brand new trailer.
Did you take advantage of him?
No, I should have though. I really should have. I did. If he wouldn't have had Kate with him, I sure would have. But you know, it was one of those days that you know, and somebody that like in Sal's situation that doesn't have cows that wants to feed cattle, mm-hmm. you know, like we don't have a lot of those people anymore.
No,
there's not a lot of those people, and it kind of blows my mind a little bit, and like in northern counties of us and surrounding counties that do feed a little bit more cattle. Like when you get up towards I guess you get over on the eastern side of the state, and you know, Dubois has a ton of cow of feedlots over there.
I'm in Davies County.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, Dubois, yeah, Jasper, Princeton down there next to Illinois, that is all, you know, fed cattle. You know, there's not a lot of pairs there, right. But it's a lot of fed cattle. And then you get into Jackson County to all the way up into northern Indiana, you know, you start farming heavy. So there's barns that do have people that have fed cattle. But those guys are gone. And I really honestly.
Nobody wants to build fence anymore.
Well, I honestly thought that these people would put in cows, you know, come to the market and buy steers in the past, you know, 6-7 months and you know, feed them and background them like Sal used to do. But, you know, here's the catch to the one thing they said is, well, we can come to the stockyards and just buy them. And then we don't have to worry about marketing them. We don't have to worry about, you know, getting a locker date and all this other stuff. We just know when we want them or the neighbor, and we'll pick up 3 or 4, take them up there and get them butchered. And yeah. I get that to a point because that's the easiest way to do it. I mean, Sal doesn't have time to go out and, you know, if he goes on a trip somewhere, you know, who's going to feed the cows? His dad could probably do it. Kate could probably do it. Whoever.
Well, you're not
but,
too far
but,
away.
Yeah, yeah. I come to it. But
he's done that before.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, it's probably easier on his part to just buy them and go. Whereas like, I just can't believe some of these farmers that have this cheap corn aren't saying, hey, how can we better this corn and make more money? Because you can feed corn to your cows right now, what corn price is, and you can make money on cattle. I mean, I can pencil it and put it on a fact sheet in front of you. But like I say, it's just one of those things that I figured there'd be a lot more people do it. And that's one of those things that like, I don't know why.
I think Jeff's right. I think the fences are all gone.
Yeah, they are.
They've just been dozed out.
They are. And how much does it cost to put up a fence? I mean, I don't know, but I'm just going to throw a number that the last fence quote that I had was from a good guy that me and Sal know of. And that was 4 or 5 years ago. And I think it was around $15,000 or $16,000 a mile or something. A mile of fence isn't that
doesn't go very far.
I mean, you go to this jag, that jag, and over here, and then you had to pay extra for your corner post and that. And I'm like, whoa, you know, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So,
and it's a lifestyle change. If you've got out of the livestock habit, mm-hmm. And then you that's go back into it. It's like, yeah, I don't know if I missed this as much as I thought.
Well, and then the, you know, like, you know, you got to, that's another thing too, you know, just like on the cattle part, the fencing, your tractors, whatever. You see the initial cost. The cow calf pair is going to cost $4,000. The new tractor is going to cost $110,000. And the new, you know, the feed bill is going to be $800-$900 a head to feed these things. And, you know, you see all that up front, but you really got to figure that's, you need to depreciate that. You know, that's going to be our cost over the next 5 years or 10 years, whatever you got it figured out to be. So it's one of those things. Yes, it is a hit up front, but even like with our company, we're trying to do stuff with young people to get them loans, you know, or like, you know, maybe even a farmer that wants to expand a little bit. Cause you know, there's a lot of farmers that could handle 5 more cows. You know, if there's 4 people in this room right now and we just increased Indiana's population of cows by 20 head.
Yeah.
You know, so it's one of those things that when the market's really this high, that we've never seen it this high.
And you know, it's going to stay.
Yeah. Right now is the time that, you know, yeah, we want to sell and we want to take advantage of some of this, but at the same time, you know, we probably still need to be laying something back or buying something that's young that can produce for another 5 years or something like that.
So you're bullish on this cow market, obviously. You think it's going to hold for a while. So what's in the short term, looking into spring and summer, what kind of market update could you give us that guys would want to hear today?
Yeah, I would say looking into spring and summer, I think spring's going to be hot. I really do. I really think it's going to be hot. I tell you, I was looking at the market quotes from last year to this year. We're not too far off compared to what we was last year at this time to what we are right now. We are probably $10-$15 a hundred higher, but we're not real far off on a lot of categories. I think the biggest bonus that we're going to get out of the market coming up is going to be on the kill cows and the slaughter bulls. I think those things are going to, where it's going to come up just because of the hamburger usage, the slot, like I say, on them slaughter fat steers, you know, those things there are, I'd say they're how high can you get a steak, you know, before people quit eating it. And when they quit eating it, they try something else. And if they do like it, it's hard to get them back. So, you know, how high can you get a fat steer? How high can you get a cow? If you get the cows on up into the same price as the fat steers, you know, we seen $1.70 cows last year. We seen $2 bulls last year. If you had a really, really, really good one right now, it might bring $2, but you know, bulls at $1.70, you know, and then you look at the fat cattle, you know, a select drop down to $2, you know, $1.96, $2 somewhere in there. I mean, you're just cents apart. You know, in a cow, you know, you think, oh, I'm going to take this 1,300 pound cow to get her ground up in hamburger. Well, for 20 more cents, do you want to take a select steer that's not as fat and get some steaks and some hamburger?
Yeah, that's true.
You know,
let's do another little exercise here. So let's say I'm going to buy 10 calves this spring. I got a little grass. I'm going to give a little feed and stuff. What's the best month for me to look at marketing those next fall?
So this is what I tell people.
I don't want to through the winter because I don't want to feed hay. I just want to grass them out and feed them sell next fall.
So this is what I tell people. I said this. It all depends on what happens in August and July. Same as row crop. What happened when it's pollinating? When it gets dry, the dry is, you know, global warming. When it gets dry, that determines when you would sell. So let's say you bought 10, you bought 3 or 4 little calves and 10, whatever, and you got it on the acreage there. And when that ground dries and you have to start feeding hay as an alternate source, you're going to say, hey, I want to sell them. That may be in August. Okay. Or it may be in October, November. Now, if let's just say everything happens on a normal cycle and we're going to expect some drought, but we're grain feeding them and hand feeding them a little bit and stuff like that. So we can justify maybe buying a roll or two of hay, you know, hey, I'll buy $100, $150 worth of hay and invest in these things just to give them some roughage, just cause I know, you know, I want to keep them a little bit more. I see a little more potential in them. The biggest thing I can tell you is when you get those calves out, and let's say you bought them in May and you bought 10 calves, and let's say they weigh 3 to 450 somewhere in there, and you put them on grass. The one thing that I see a lot of the people that they don't do is they don't go back through and give them a wormer, because those calves pick up stuff out, you know, like something out of the ground or a parasite or something like that, or some lice or something. If you would, if you buy those calves in May and you worm them again in, let's say, June, July, somewhere in there, August, somewhere in, let's say, July, give them a little wormer across their back or something, you know, that's going to kick those bugs back out. They're going to perform better. Let's say we got a little grass, everything's looking pretty good. You know, that little bit of splash you put on their back of wormer may gain you, you know, $100 a calf the way the market is.
Yeah, 40 or 50 pounds.
Yeah. And so anyways, like, you get into the months of selling. September is always a hot month. I really think October and in the first of November is the best time to sell those calves. Depending, and you know, like I say, it just depends on, if you got 10 calves, you probably wasn't planning on keeping them very long. You know, when did winter come? Typically around here, winter don't come to, like I said, January. So if you could keep, as long as you can keep those things is what I would suggest.
Okay.
Because if they are steers, they're getting better and prettier. If they're heifers, they're getting bigger and prettier and worth more value, because they maybe go back to the farm for breeding stock, or they may go back just for, you know, to go onto a feedlot somewhere. So I recommend keeping them at least until September.
Okay.
And then probably want to shoot for that October, November market.
Okay.
That's good. That's good advice.
We covered a lot of ground today.
We did.
Even before the podcast started.
Yeah.
Some things we can't say on air.
Yeah, no. That's right.
Well, Ryan, thanks a lot. We always value your insight and your the knowledge you got with the markets, and sure sounds like things look good for the cattle industry.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good. I'm bullish on it. So,
no pun intended.
I know.
Yeah, that's right.
Had to say it. All right, Jeff. Anything else?
Nope. I think we expect a funny story next time you're on.
I'll do it.
All right. Well, that's another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Thank you very much.
Thank you.